There will be pain.
I'll scream.
A great deal of pain.
I'll scream very loudly.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chomp, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons licensed music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3. Well, there may be some screaming this episode.
Maybe a tad.
I wish Daryl was on. He would scream.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so this week, episode, 102 now?
I mean, 102 for the listeners.
Yeah, 102 for the listeners. 102.5 for us. Okay, really, 103. Yeah. We did a full episode that got lost. But I guess maybe we shouldn't beat ourselves up too much over that. It happens eventually to everyone. So anyway, this week we've got me, Will Lentz, also known as Kenan.
And me, Will Lentz, also known as Brett Zeiler, also known as Intentionally Anonymous.
Oh god, this is so confusing. Too many AKAs.
It's crazy. At one point when I was on Bearspawn fairly regularly, listeners didn't realize that Brett and Zeiler were the same person.
Wow.
Because sometimes they'd call me Brett, sometimes they'd call me Zeiler, and sometimes like different people in the same episode would call me something different.
Right, wow.
So I played off as Brett and Zeiler in one episode.
And they didn't notice that
the
you
voice
had the same
was
voice?
The exact same? No, I guess not. But they're like some people legitimately didn't realize that Brett and Zeiler were two different people.
I mean,
we're not two different people.
That can be tough when you're just listening to stuff and can't see them, though. I mean, I got a comment not too long ago from a listener and friend of the show, Todd Frazee, or maybe just friend of me because of a Melee game we had a couple years ago at Worlds. But anyway, yeah, he was asking if I'm that tiny dude from the Star Wars podcast. And I was like, what? Really?
That's funny. That's funny.
Yeah, exactly.
So clearly you are.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a very small man.
Yes.
But well endowed.
No.
It's amazing.
It's really not.
It's kind of like Tyrion.
It's very unlike Tyrion.
Really?
Yes.
I thought I bore striking resemblance.
You do not.
My lack of nose doesn't...
That helps.
Oh, okay.
That showed some commitment to the costume.
Okay. Yeah. Man, you would not believe the effort I had to go to pull that off.
Yeah, better do. Just a pair of scissors.
Well, then.
Self-mutilation jokes.
Yeah, wow. That's
what you get when you turn into Two Champs, One Chump.
Not a direction I expected the intro to go today.
I usually take things to a dark place.
You do. That did actually go surprisingly dark. Well, it's probably fitting, I think, for this show. I'm not going to say that some of the news and updates and topics we have here are cutting off your nose to spite your face. But in some ways it feels like it.
I don't share that opinion, but maybe not that strongly, but I mean, I definitely understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah. Boy, is it shocking. So this week on Two Champs and a Chump, a good portion of things is going to be taken up with this one bit of news.
Yes.
But to preface that, before we get there, we're again trying to organize things a little better, hit up some listener feedback and contact info and news at the top of the show. So listener feedback this week is mainly going to be related to the big news update, the big one, which I probably ought to quit dancing around and actually just mention.
No, we should remember that's the big news until we start talking about it.
Well, that'll be all related to the big news. So once you've heard us discuss it, if you've got your own opinions on the big news, make sure you mention that. Contact us on Facebook, Two Champs, One Chump, or the Twitters, also Two Champs, One Chump, or the Gmails, Two Champs, One Chump. All those are digits, by the way, not spelled out. That's twochampsonechump@gmail.com. We've got the whole Google Plus thing, which I remember to log into. Yeah, you know, I remember to log into it once a month or so.
Oh, wow.
Plus, you know, it would email me if somebody said something.
That's true.
So, you know, I would find out eventually. Mm-hmm. And some things like that. So make sure you let us know. We're still looking at maybe getting a new mic and such at some point. So go check out the Cafe Press shop, Two Champs, One Chump, and buy yourself some swag.
A Two Champs, One Chump flask would be very fitting.
Exactly. You know, actually, what's a great idea for listeners?
What's that?
And that we may need to do at our own regional, and that's use Two Champs and a Chump gear as prizes at a regional.
Ooh.
You know, FFG, hopefully this year, already doing a pretty decent prize pack from what we know. But if you want to throw in something extra, a little special, you throw in a flask. If you want to make it extra, extra special, you fill the flask before you give it out.
With official Two Champs, One Chump liquor.
Wow, we should get on that. We really should.
It would have to be some really bad stuff.
Oh, like, yeah. Just... It's going to be like plastic bottle vodka.
Yeah.
We're just going to slap a 2C1C label.
Over the aristocrat.
Exactly. You may actually still see part of the
aristocrat label. Oh, I guarantee you will.
Yeah. But oh well. We tried.
We'll take a Sharpie and scratch everyone refers to himself as aristocrat.
We actually won't even slap a label on it. We're just going to write in Sharpie 2C1C.
The vodka.
Man. Whew. Good times.
Great oldies.
So news, right?
News.
News. We've had a little bit of LCG-related news so far, aside from the big news.
Aside from the big news, indeed.
Mm-hmm. And one bit of that news has to do with the LCGs in general, right?
Yes.
Brett, you're the one that brought this one to my attention, so why don't you recap it for the listeners?
Basically, for the organized play for this coming regional season, and assumably in the future, FFG has been doing either alt art or like the Star Wars cards aren't alt art, but they're like an Aurabresh or however you pronounce it.
Aurabash?
Something like that. I mean, some kind of crazy text.
Aurabesh. Sorry, they have it spelled out here in the article.
Convenient. So they are releasing like alternate arts for cards or alternate versions of cards, which is something that people have been asking about for a long time because they're pretty cool. It's not giving anyone like any kind of specific edge except for the fact that they just have an extra copy of whatever card that they probably already own. But apparently, I actually saw people talking about this on the actual forums like a week ago, before this actually went up, comparing the backs of these cards to the backs of actual LCG cards, and they are significantly different.
Oh, I noticed that when we got our kit in and I looked at them, they are faded looking is probably the best description.
Yes, so FFG actually put up a announcement about this, and said that because the reason they look different is because they use their print-on-demand service, which lets them more easily customize how many they're going to need for whatever kits are ordered. Which, I mean, is a good move on their part.
Makes perfect sense
to me. I cannot fault them for that.
Yeah.
And if they happen to look different, I mean, it's not a huge deal because you have to use sleeves anyway.
Yeah. I mean, looking at the face of the cards, it didn't look bad.
No.
Maybe a slight fade, like the blacks, I think, is the main thing. The blacks aren't as vivid as the traditional printing.
Yeah, they're a little grayer.
Yeah, and I think that's just what makes it look so visible on the back, is there's so much of the black and the dark shadows on the throne and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the front was barely noticeable. Yeah. And like you said, you're supposed to play in sleeves anyway, so,
I mean, unless
the back is going to be covered up.
Unless you use clear sleeves.
Actually, colored are probably required.
They are not.
Really?
They are not. Only the, sleeves
doesn't
are required.
It say opaque?
In the past, it did. It's changed, actually. And it probably changed months ago.
Yeah, there's a chance of that. You know what? I happen to have that document called up here. Let's just scroll back up into the attorney document. Nope. It is just protective sleeves. You know, I was also reading another PDF today, which is another news item that we may touch on for a moment, and I could have sworn that the Star Wars tournament rules mention opaque sleeves in particular. So let's take a look for comparison's sake. Just protective.
Yep. I mean, I wasn't lying to you, Will. I know what it said.
You're sure you weren't lying to me?
I'm pretty sure.
I mean,
sure.
You can't fault me for assuming that you were.
That's fair. I am a notorious liar.
Exactly.
Not to gain anything, usually. Just for funsies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess maybe that's it on that bit of news.
Yeah.
It's just, well, makes sense.
Yeah.
Make sure you use sleeves, because you're supposed to anyway.
Yeah.
And plus, who actually uses clear ones?
Very few people that I've known. I don't think I've ever actually played in a tournament against one using clear sleeves. I know Jake uses them with his Netrunner stuff occasionally, but I think he's even moved beyond to having opaque sleeves.
Gotcha.
The other LCG-related news, as like Will said, the Star Wars tournament document did go up as of today.
Today, yeah. the 27th.
Yes. I didn't actually read through it at all, although I probably should. I know Will took a quick glance through it, if not reading it fully. I don't know, honestly, if he did read it in full.
I mean, I skimmed heavily. Mm-hmm. You know, most stuff was pretty simple.
Yeah.
You know, copied over, I think, from all the other games, yeah. Pretty well. There, of course, there was info on tiebreakers and stuff, mm-hmm. So it's good to have the rules up finally.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just barely over a month before the actual regional events start happening there. The first weekend
in April, the 5th through the 7th, I guess.
So it's kind of awkward to me. I mean, having a month is good.
Yeah, it's a good
like that's
time.
What they used to do for, you know, chapter packs back in the day. And really, the expansion sets back in the day, mm-hmm. was the big thing, you know, a month before they were legal. But it does seem like a bit of a bummer, because I know like Carl and Romero and whoever at Metagames, where we play, has been excited to get stuff going and to run some test tourneys before the regional event.
Mm-hmm.
This doesn't give a lot of time for people to
do that a month before regional starts to get your testing in with whatever new stuff you're looking into.
Yeah. I mean, not even necessarily like for players as far as how to test their decks.
Yeah.
But I mean, literally running the tournament. That's fair. And organizing that stuff can be trickier to find time here in this month frame rather than a player just trying to get used to some new cards.
Fair enough.
But, oh well. All right. Well, I know we are looking at doing some stuff at Metagames to kind of get things rolling for what I'm calling the big three LCGs, mm-hmm. The ones that are most popular in our area and probably in general. So that's going to be Thrones, the old school King of the Hill or whatever, and then Star Wars and Netrunner as the
new Kings of the Hill.
Yeah. And so we have a little bit of kind of local news that we want to throw out there, because the guys that run Metagames where we play have kind of come up with a league scheme to get people going. And I know there's always listeners asking about ideas on kind of expanding their meta and how to run leagues and get events going. In fact, Todd Frazee, that I mentioned earlier in the episode, was messaging me on Facebook about that last week. So here's what Metagames is looking at doing right now for the LCG players, since so many of us seem to drift back and forth between multiple games. So they're looking at running the schedule here from March 9th through May 26th. So basically a 3-month window, pretty much?
Yeah, the Springfield, Missouri regional season ends on May 26th, or on that weekend is when our Thrones regional is supposed to be, as far as I know.
Gotcha.
So after that, there are still regionals going on, but none in Springfield.
Right. So we're looking to have ours kind of coincide with the regional season right now then. And so every Saturday night is kind of defined as our league night. It's when we've been meeting for ages anyway, but we're going to kind of codify things a little bit. You're going to have a tournament going every weekend and just league night time, free play. Yeah. So the tournaments that they're doing are going to be $3 per person with $4 store credit payout per player divided up between the top four. And then we're going to accrue points over the course of this league season based on how you do in your games. So it's going to be 1 point just for finishing a game, which I like because that gives you some incentive to stick things out.
Mm-hmm.
1 point for actually winning the game, 3 points for getting first overall in a tourney, 2 for second, and 1 for third or fourth.
Yeah.
Then you can play the free play pickup games, and you just get a flat 1 point for game for those, unless it's a Thrones melee, then you get 2 points. And Carl said you can report up to one game an hour or one melee every 2 hours. And this one I asked for some clarification on, and he did clarify for me that for our setup, you could report, you know, say Zyler and I sit down and we play a game of Netrunner and it goes really fast. Then we could play Star Wars and whatever. And if we're done with both inside of that hour time limit, we could still report each of them because they're different game systems. So I kind of like, you know, if we wanted to have kind of an Iron Man sort of night, you know, with whoever's around to just play through a bunch of them, we can get rewarded for that.
I think
it seems like a pretty decent way to keep things going.
Absolutely. It's a good setup.
And the tournaments themselves are going to rotate between the games. So, for instance, the first week's Netrunner, then Thrones, then Star Wars. And then
leading up to our Netrunner regional, we have a couple weeks of just Netrunner.
Right.
And it's like that for every regional. The week or two before our regional is tournaments for that tournament.
Yeah, so. Which I kind of like that. It looks funny when you just look at the list and you see some of the games repeat several times in a row, and you don't see ADOT for, you know, a month or something like that. But the reasoning makes sense. You line up there and have a couple practice tourneys right before the regional for that game, and then you rotate for a couple weeks, and then a couple the next game. So I dig it overall.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I think it's going to be a good setup. Okay, so personal news for us here on the show is we're starting a new podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. We've kicked the idea around before. I know we've mentioned here on 2C1C, the possibility of doing it, and we kind of hemmed and hawed and hadn't really decided until this week. I was basically like, I want to do this. It sounds fun. Do this with me.
And I was like, eh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is about what I do for 2C1C.
Yeah, exactly. That's just the most enthusiastic Brett is about anything. So I took that as good news.
Oh, it is.
Yeah. So here's the game plan. Folks really like 2C1C's longer episodes, right? We tried it in an hour. We drifted long. Folks liked it long. They complained when we tried to pull it back to an hour. We're going to take the opposite approach. Frankly, it's not that we think people wouldn't like a longer other show.
It's that Will's too lazy to edit too.
Yeah, it's just that, damn it, it takes a lot of time in, you know, editing and getting together to record and whatnot. And I just don't think we can manage two of a similar length. Mm-hmm. But we're looking at doing a more general nerd or geek show, maybe more geek. I read an interesting article or something the other day that kind of mentioned the difference between those.
Mm-hmm.
Nerds are more specifically the science and math end of things, whereas geek are more pop culture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we would fall more squarely into the pop culture
probably, sort of area.
So the game plan, I think, is, in my mind, to use Robert Sanderson's pretty fantastic...
You mean Brandon Sanderson's?
Yes. Sorry. Brandon Sanderson. Sorry. Accidentally flipped that because he finished Robert Jordan's series. Brandon Sanderson's great podcast called Writing Excuses. He's got some other folks on the show with him who, unfortunately, I can't remember all of their names right now. Mary something... Dan Wells, I don't know, they're all authors, and they pick one topic, they discuss it, they have a little banner, they have some good feedback and stuff, and keep it right at 15 minutes. Sometimes they'll drift a little long, it may edge up to 20 minutes, but they try and keep it very much in that shorter end, and just hit one topic per week. So I think that's what we're looking at doing, just a very short, focused cast, each hopefully week, maybe bi-weekly.
Yeah.
We're going to kind of iron out details on how to run the whole show. But we want to be able to talk about any of the LCGs we play.
Any board game. Movies, comics, TV.
Archer, Sherlock, comic books, just anything we can think of in that genre. So, since we have decided for certain we're doing it now, we're running a contest.
Yes, we are.
We're starting it, announcing it here on 2C1C. So you heard it here first. We need a name. We tried to brainstorm some today. We couldn't come up with anything that was really doing it for us that was not already taken.
Mm-hmm.
So contact us at the previously mentioned Gmail address, 2champs1chomp@gmail.com, with your suggestions for the name of the show. And let's see, how long do you think we ought to run this for?
A couple weeks? A couple weeks, yeah.
For a couple weeks.
Until we say otherwise.
Until we have a winner.
Yes.
But probably a couple weeks.
Probably.
At which point we'll announce you on this show. We'll shoot you a line back so you already know. We'll re-announce you in the first episode of that show. And then we'll bring you on as a guest host.
And one of the first couple episodes, we'll bring you on as a guest host. Yeah. We'll let you choose the topic we're going to talk about. And as long as it's one that we all think we can all talk about, done.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
If it's an awful topic, we'll tell you it's an awful topic and tell you to pick another.
Yeah, if you want to talk about like macrocellular biology or something.
I'm not going to talk about that.
Yeah, that falls squarely in the nerd category. We're not so strong on that.
No, we're not.
But yeah, should be cool, I think.
Yeah.
So let us know.
Keep in mind, 2C1C is not going anywhere. We will still be recording this show. We are doing an additional show on top of that.
Yes, yeah. Which is why the shorter length will be so much easier to manage.
Absolutely.
I think we've done pretty much everything we can to avoid this doozy, haven't we?
I think we have. I can't think of anything else to talk about.
All right. Well, here goes. The slugfest. Let the slugfest ensue. Mr. Brett Zeiler, what is the big news?
There was a new FAQ. There were a couple changes.
There were things.
Things happened.
Yep, things and more things.
I guess specifically there was an FAQ and a tournament rules update.
Yeah.
There were both.
Boy, there's a lot to discuss there, and that isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you think about some of these? Where should we start, meant. We starting with the FAQ or the tourney rules?
Let's start with the tourney rules.
The tourney rules.
Change my mind at the last minute.
Way to be. Well, okay, we've already established that the tourney rules did not require opaque sleeves.
They have not for
but
a while.
What else is there? There's one big new section, two pages worth. Of one brand new section.
Yes.
Now another section doubled in length, but that's a different issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing, before we do jump into that, I do want to make sure everyone's aware of the card legality for the tournament season. They've announced in advance what chapter packs are legal in what months now.
Which is fairly handy.
Yeah, useful. I mean, it keeps them from needing to make one general announcement at the beginning of the season and then potentially update it as the season goes by.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally, if they had just allowed for the first two chapter packs, then we'd be 4 months down the road with just the first two chapter packs legal unless they change that. Now, depending on what month it is, you know exactly what chapter packs of the new cycle are legal.
Right. You know, speaking of announcing things, I did mean to mention this earlier, because it applies both to the LCG print-on-demand promo cards mm-hmm. announcement and the announcement of the new tourney rules and the FAQ update. They were not posted on the FFG front page.
They were not.
Which is very bizarre, because the Star Wars tourney rules release was. I don't know what's up with this, where important releases and announcements like this are not getting posted to the front page anymore, and instead they're buried in the support section of that game or whatever.
I mean, they're usually on the front page for that specific game.
Right, but it's not particularly quick and easy to see when that sort of thing has happened, unless someone else tells you, because they happen to go looking for it.
That's true.
So I don't really dig that they were not posted on the front page.
I mean, I usually see them on the forums, because they'll flash up like at the top of the forums, new articles. That's where I see most of my news. I don't check the front page or the specific game pages very often.
No, see, I check the front page. I almost never check the specific game pages, but I check the front page daily.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple times a day, honestly.
I check the forums multiple times a day.
I do, but nothing ever happens.
I mean, sometimes things happen.
Rarely do things happen.
But that's neither here nor there. So we talked about card legality. It's good that that was announced in advance. It's a pretty good way to handle that, assuming that production doesn't get off and a chat track that's supposed to be legal in May doesn't release until July.
Assuming. I don't think that'll happen as far as production goes, because they're all produced, but yes. I could see something happening with distribution.
Fair enough.
And that would suck.
I did speak poorly there. But as far as new things go, I guess probably maybe not the biggest piece of news from these few from these PDFs is the new code of conduct. There's now 2 pages worth of code of conduct rules, and they are
pretty huge.
Yeah,
and exhaustive.
I mean, they are not exhaustive. They are specifically not exhaustive. Not exhaustive.
Sorry, I misspoke there. I meant it was exhausting to read.
That I can agree with.
Yeah. You know, there was a huge article that FFG put up along with these mm-hmm. updates and kind of a joint letter from Nate and Damon about how necessary it is to kind of keep the competition above board, or at least to establish that it should be above board so that everyone is playing under the same expectations.
Yes.
And, you know, they make decent examples there that when people from different metas and different playgroups are coming to these events...
They have different expectations.
Right. And without that being firmly established, okay, I can kind of get them. People come and they're not all on the same page.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this puts everyone pretty forcefully on the same page. So it kind of breaks down then... the code of conduct. And it's interesting, when I started reading this, I was almost afraid this was going to be something you were going to have to sign every time you came into a tournament. Because the first page, or the first paragraph of the code of conduct pages, is talking about entering into a Game of Thrones organized play event, you attest to this and attest to that, and understand other things and whatnot.
I'm pretty sure it's just saying what is expected of you by doing that, Will. I don't think it's something you're going to have to sign.
I work at a bank where I have to have people sign these sort of things, and I'm also a notary. Like, I was afraid I'm going to have to start taking my notary stamp to tournaments so I can notarize everyone's, code of conduct agreements.
I mean, that'd be awesome.
Can we do that for our regional?
You will finally be useful.
I will bring my notary stamp to our regional.
Will, I don't want to deal with that.
I don't know that it'll be particularly binding since I won't be in Newton County.
Yeah, it probably wouldn't be.
But it still could be fun.
I don't think so.
Have you used one of those stamps?
I have not.
They're really fun.
I'll take your word on it.
So anyway, it's got several sections here. So maybe a quick glance those sections?
Yeah, I mean, the big thing is that it details that, as expected, FFG has a zero tolerance, or maybe not so zero tolerance, but they... do not allow cheating.
I mean, they said they have a zero tolerance policy.
But they also explained, I mean, there is zero tolerance, but the punishment could vary.
Yes.
I guess is a better way to put it. Cheating is not accepted. You may be punished differently depending on how you are cheating.
Yeah. Severity of issue and circumstances.
Yeah. So they actually went through and specified several different types of cheating, and then did make sure at the end to make sure they said that these are examples. This is not an exhaustive list. It is impossible to determine every single type of cheating that could occur, and it is at the TO's discretion to mete out punishments and determine what is and is not cheating.
Right. And, you know, there's this huge cheating thing here, and the last paragraph of the cheating header mentions the different categories that they have, which include, but are not limited to, sleight of hand tricks, component manipulation, collusion, misrepresentation, unsportsmanlike conduct, and angle shooting.
Is there a special mention? Because it is not in the list, or it's not given as an example of what is cheating in the actual code of conduct.
Special mention, as noted by listener Nick Bester, angle shooting is never brought up again.
It is not.
So that's very interesting.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I feel like it's a pool reference.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough about pool.
I mean, I'm not familiar with
it. It may also be a poker reference, because I know Nate plays a lot of poker.
Yeah.
But again, uncertainty.
Yes. But as far as what we do have examples for, the first one is sleight of hand tricks, which includes, like, drawing extra cards or placing extra power on things. Things that you are doing to manipulate whatever's going on. Maybe a poor example because I'm just talking from memory rather than actually reading the article, but I didn't actually want to just read the article.
I mean, secretly drawing extra cards and removing extra power, counting extra gold.
Fair enough.
Things that involve you sneaking extra stuff
in. Doing something in a hidden or veiled manner with the intent of gaining competitive advantage.
Right.
So I did pick a couple good examples.
Yeah, yeah, good job. Though, you know, I would clarify, they're not tricks. It's magic. Tricks are what whores do for money.
Or cocaine.
Right. But, you know, Daryl's kind of the cocaine king.
He is
the cocaine king. And it just didn't feel right to mention cocaine without him.
I mean, I'm not going to let you not necessarily misquote one of my favorite characters from one of my favorite TV shows, but leave out a part of his quote.
Okay, fair enough.
Next up is physical manipulation, which would be like marking cards.
Yeah, it sounds very closely related. But I think maybe sleight of hand is more
like during a game.
Yeah, yeah.
Physical manipulation is outside of a game. So, like playing with marked cards or changing your deck in between rounds.
Right.
Or
interestingly enough, using an electronic device to assist with calculation. I don't know offhand. You know, the math in Thrones.
I don't think it gets high enough to need a calculator. Yeah,
doesn't seem high enough for that. I don't know what sort of issues you would have with pulling out a calculator, as far as why that would be a problem in the cheating category, mm-hmm. but
whatever.
It's there, so know that, yes. Just in case.
In addition to that, we have collusion, which refers to... I'm going to read this one.
It has several of its own sections it does. Well.
It's any attempt by two or more players to act as partners or teammates sharing a common hidden or premeditated strategy for a match or tournament that goes on. You get the gist.
Right.
Of that, as Will said, inside of collusion, there are examples of collusion, which again are not exhaustive, but they are just examples of collusion.
Right. So the first one there, soft play, is basically where we're kind of not playing the way we normally would in a situation if the other person, say, again, this is probably all in Melee, say the other person at the Melee game was not someone else that we knew on a, quote, team, end quote here, where you know, don't trigger something you normally would or just otherwise play kind of off in order to not impact them.
Yes. If, like, I'm at 14 power and Will's at 7 and someone else is at 8, but Will has no defenders, challenging the other person who's at 8 to knock him down to lower power than Will so that Will stays ahead. That's what I think of when I think of soft play.
Yeah, that's... I'd say that's fairly reasonable.
Yes. Throwing a game is also on here, which I guess is actually fairly similar to what I was literally just describing. It's... Conceding a game, but not conceding by playing.
Yeah, yeah, and that's one that could very easily apply in Joust as well. Brett and I get paired up against each other, and I don't know, Brett's at like, you know, I don't know what, 3-1, and somehow he got paired down, and I'm 2-2, and got paired up, and whatever, and I, you know, am like, I'll sit here and play characters and never defend or something like that.
Yeah.
So that Brett can win.
Or just, you know, not marshal anything ever and just...
Yeah, yeah. So that would be definitely throwing the game. Okay, next item is information sharing. So that's going to be passing communication of exclusive information between partners during a game. So that's, yes, using hand gestures or special codes or signals.
Yeah, secret signals.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know, semaphore flags
is what I'm thinking. I was going to say smoke signals. We'll light fires and...
but, you know, now this one, if this made mention of the electronic devices, that I could understand as far as text messaging goes is my first go-to thing. And, you know, this is interesting because I do recall an issue at Worlds a couple years ago where a player asked Nate...
Yeah, 2009, I think.
2009?
I think so.
Okay. Where a player asked Nate about being able to like pass information to someone else like that. And, you know, I don't remember well enough now what that answer was.
It was yes. The answer was yes.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. So it is no longer acceptable.
Next up would be bribery and coercion, which means Bruno's never going to win a game ever again.
I know. All that man does is hand out sexual favors.
I know. It's, I mean, it's a currency.
Yeah, exactly. They're a little bit like gold dragons, mm-hmm. only creamier.
I mean, I bought a soda off Will earlier by giving him two angry HJs from Bruno.
Yeah, it actually, it's a small coin featuring a very angry John Bruno face on them. We should really market those. Yeah. We should mint those. Some. Yeah, I would use those instead of gold dragons in a heartbeat.
Bullying is also on the list, which isn't specifically like threatening someone because that clearly falls under like coercion. But bullying would be like going in, gunning for one person or other.
Yeah, naming out targets and I don't know, giving people instructions to hammer.
The specific goal would be minimizing someone's results or make them have less fun in a tournament, which, I mean, if you're reducing my results, I'm having less fun.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah.
And then that brings us to team play, which is kind of an interesting one. When Brett and I were reading through this, it feels like the first sentence or so of this almost actually should have gone under the bullying headline, because then the next section changes tone radically. So the first sentence is talking about entering or approaching an event as a team or block of players planning to manipulate the field to gain an advantage. So I can see that as bullying, you know, bringing a bunch of people in to gun for somebody else and whatnot. And then abruptly team play changes to talk about deck construction.
Yeah, which I'm not going to name names, but I think we all know where that came from.
I'm not going to name names, but I will name cards.
Yeah.
That is pretty obviously direct reference to the Hellholt Engineer Scourge combo being the most obvious. Yeah. There are other possible versions. But the one that has caused an issue
and gained the most
in a tournament is the Hellholt one.
Yes.
And it only works when multiple people have coordinated.
I mean, it doesn't only work. It is only degenerate when multiple people are coordinating it.
Well, yeah, sorry. I guess I'm assuming that the point is to be degenerate. So that's what I'm calling working. If you're just sometimes standing in some locations and taking some extra icons, that just is kind of a byproduct in my mind.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I felt the distinction was important to make.
Okay. Fair enough. That's all the sections under collusion.
Misrepresentation is also on the list, so that'd be like saying, like, you know, if I attack a bunch of guys and Will asks me how much strength is in the challenge, and I say 10 and it's actually 12.
Right.
And then he, you know, defends accordingly with 11 strength of the characters. I'm like, oh, LOL, it's actually 12, I win.
Yeah. Or I'm attacking with guys and, you know, Zyler's like, any deadly? And I'm like,
nah. And it was totally deadly.
Yep.
Yeah, so think like the actual blatant game state lies.
Yeah, exactly. And that also, you know, it mentions refers to any, like, known quantities. So, like, number of cards in hand and things like that. So, be careful there. And then just general unsportsmanlike conduct is also mentioned here on the list. So, don't be using hostile language at people or physically act intimidating.
I mean, that means I can never play again.
Yeah, or just otherwise being a bad sport, which I think, unfortunately for Daryl, I think his dream play of flipping the table
is unsportsmanlike conduct.
Yeah, exactly.
So. I mean, it then goes on to, again, like, say, as I said earlier, the TO has final say. This list isn't exhaustive. There could be, there in fact absolutely will be things not on this list that would be considered cheating and going against the code of conduct. And the TO has final say on that, which is fairly similar to how it has been in the past.
Right.
One other thing I did want to mention specifically about this is that it does make reference to potential punishments being banning from organized play in general.
Yeah. Yeah. You can. It runs the gamut from a like soft warning all the way up to that.
Yes.
And anything in between, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you could potentially, if you cheat hard enough, or serious enough, or premeditated enough, there's a possibility that you will never play in organized play events again.
It is possible. And interesting also along with that judge thing, now this is a section posted from, along with the article here, at the release, and this is part of the joint letter from Nate and Damon, where it mentions that it's like the next to last paragraph here, in the instance where a player lacks the integrity to police his own behavior, however, there is a chance that a judge will notice and realize what is going on. When and if this does occur, the judge has both the authority and the ethical imperative to act. Which I think is interesting because there have been a lot of debates before about when the judge is supposed to step in. Are they supposed to step in? And I think this kind of open letter sort of thing here, along with the announcement, seems to say that it is for sure the judge's responsibility to step in the moment they are aware of an issue.
So my question is, and what I asked you when we were prepping for the episode, reading this over, I know it's been a very long-standing ruling that judges are supposed to be, like, quiet in the background, answering questions, but taking no action. Do you feel like this is specifically related to the actual cheating rules? Or does it carry over into, like, watching a game and seeing, like, in a game, if players miss passives, that is technically cheating.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
should the judge step in at that point and correct the game state?
If they miss those passives, that, I think, actually falls under one of these previous headings. I want to say misrepresentation. It mentions here in quotes, forgetting to acknowledge passive effects, mm-hmm. acting out of turn, yada, yada, yada. And so I think that sort of thing falls in there. Now, I don't know if that means judges are just going to be more inclined to stay away from the games and, you know, stay aside at a table or something, but they're not over there where they see it.
I mean, but at that point, if the judge is supposed to take an active role, they clearly should be watching games.
Right. That's going to be tough. And, the rules here still mention that a TO can participate in the tournament, you know, as long as those other kind of requirements are met. So that's going to make it tough. The TO can't be up watching these other mm-hmm. games at the same time then.
Whew.
I don't know.
I feel like we should have another rules document specifically related to judge etiquette and what they should do.
You know, that's not a terrible idea, I think.
I mean, I'm also fairly against TOs participating in tournaments.
You know, I think having a standardized kind of judges, I don't know, rules or whatever mm-hmm. would be kind of nice.
I agree. That's why I brought it up.
Yep. Well done.
Thank you.
You know, since I kept flipping back over here to the letter, before we get to the FAQ, I think it's probably worth noting we see several new chunks of art
mm-hmm.
Over the course of this letter, which is pretty sweet. I'm looking at one here that appears to be Cersei.
Cersei and Tanda Merriweather about to get it on.
Oh, man, I hope so. Look at that. Tana's leaning in. Yeah. Cersei looks like she's going to murder someone. Pretty sure that's that scene.
And then another Dorne Martell, assumably.
I think so. It's an old man. With a blanket on his legs. Yeah, exactly. So I don't know who else that one would be. It looks okay, not quite as exciting.
And then Barriss and Selmy and someone else.
I think that's got to be what's his name? The leader of the why can't I think of his name? The leader of the Shape Pates.
I guess that's possible. Because
he's got a helmet here shaped like an animal.
Oh, fair. One of the Brazen Beasts.
Yeah, the Brazen Beasts. Yeah,
fair enough. I mean,
or no, that was his name, the Shave Pate, right? It was something, and then he got the nickname Shave Pate because he shaved everything off when he chose to follow Dany.
I think so. He looks way wider than I would expect someone from Meereen to look.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is why I didn't even think of that.
He looks way less like Yul Brynner than I expected.
I mean, that's a white guy.
Yul Brynner?
No, like the guy in the art.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Fair enough. But anyway.
Yeah, so new art. Seems cool.
Along with new art, we have new FAQ.
There are a couple minor things that we should probably talk about before we actually get into the meat and potatoes of the FAQ.
Yep.
Included inside of those is a couple of erratas. One
bookkeeping
is
entries,
basically. One is to Maester Cressen, making his name actually Maester Cressen instead of Maester Cressen. which is what he was known as before this time, because in the course that he was misprinted without the T in his name. And technically, at one point, I think Paul brought a old school CCG Maester Crescent to a tournament, and I definitely called him on it.
Oof. Brutal, but hey, you know, at least you're consistent about being brutal on those traits and things.
I mean, it wasn't the same card.
Nope, you're correct.
In addition to that, Outfitted for War got the same treatment as Castle Battlements, I think it was. Gave the attached location immune to other non-plot card effects. So, just makes it not immune to its own, giving itself immunity. And in addition to that, they do also clarify what I had always kind of figured, and what it seems like the general opinion was that if you are playing with the Black Sails agenda, the hold, your extra, the half of your deck that isn't your draw deck, is open knowledge to you. So, as soon as you do know which is your hold and which is your draw deck, you can look through the hold and see what's in there to get an idea of what's in the draw deck. And effectively a very good one, because you'll know which cards are not in it.
Yeah, having all that knowledge is huge.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be strong. There's also another little modification. This one on gold modifiers.
Yes.
They are now clarified as... So anything in that kind of gold dragon icon on a card is now a gold
modifier. Instead of a gold bonus.
Right. And then that is split into two categories, bonuses and penalties. So bonuses have a plus sign and penalties have a minus.
Specifically, that makes the Knights of the Hollow Hill agenda susceptible to burn and pillage. In the past, due to Knights of the Hollow Hill ignoring gold bonuses, the negative bonus was still a bonus, even though it was negative, and they were immune to that. Now they are not.
Yeah. So, I mean, whatever. I don't think that's a huge, like, drain on Knights of the Hollow
Hill
affected now.
The big thing is that it does go against a fairly standard precedent that's been going on for at least as long as I've been playing the game.
It's been established for quite a while at this point. It feels a little weird to me to reverse that now, but maybe that's just because I was so used to using essentially absolute value. Like, literally anything in that gold dragon circle was a bonus, regardless of whether it was a plus or minus. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever. It's not a huge change.
No, it
just,
is not.
It just feels weird to reverse that after so many years.
Mm-hmm. Now to the real news.
Yeah.
After
making you really going to feel weird.
So long.
About 45 minutes of the show.
Yeah. You're welcome, listeners. Having listened to us for 45 minutes, I can't think of a worse fate.
Must have been unbearable.
I'd have offed myself already.
He actually tried during the recording. Yeah.
Will had to slap a noose out of my hand. I had a big handful of pills that he had to take half of.
Yeah. I'm not feeling so good, dude.
That was my plan all along, actually.
Oh, okay.
I'm so sorry.
Okay, so the restricted lists have been updated. Both
melee and joust.
Yes.
The joust list is got more different than the melee list is.
Much more different.
So let's start with the melee list.
Exactly. Much easier, because the melee restricted list is still at a fairly reasonable size.
Yes, it is.
There were three new cards added to that list.
Two we are actually already mentioned earlier on the episode in relation to the team playing a bit of the code of conduct being cheating. Specifically the Hellholt Engineer Scourge combo, you could call it. It's only really a combo if two players are playing with it, but still a combo at that point.
Right, because both players would need to have both cards in play.
But they would have one Hellholt Engineer and one Scourge.
Right, and now just either player, like one player could have the Hellholt and the other the Scourge, which isn't going to go very far.
No.
Or both could have, like, the Scourge which and that's not going to go anywhere either.
I mean,
it'll take
two characters' icons.
Right. So it feels a little weird to have a control card like the Scourge put on the melee restricted list, since they took so many control cards off for melee when they split the list.
They clearly just did it because of the help, like the little combo there, which,
right,
in my opinion, is what the restricted list should be used for.
Exactly. That's actually what I was gonna say as well. It feels weird to put the control card on, but the reason it went on is, I think, the specific reason the restricted list exists.
Yeah, neither of
them... Or was originally claimed to have existed for. But we'll come back around
to that. We will. Yeah, neither of them are particularly powerful in their own right, but together they are fairly powerful, even if there's even if there's just one person at the table playing that.
Right. Though it is kind of a bit of a bummer that this is almost certainly a soft ban on the Scourge in Melee.
Yes.
You know, why would you not grab one of these other ones? The Hellhold Engineer is probably kind of underplayed by itself in Melee anyway, because you get some... You can still do some cool stuff with it. But I think it may still be a soft ban on it as well.
Probably more than the Scourge, honestly.
Because of the other card that got added. Because all three cards that were added are Martell.
Yes, they are. And had you listened to the golden episode that was lost forever, you would realize that we see the future.
Ooh. That actually turned out more Tarzan-y. It was supposed to be like, ooh. Yeah, I don't know. Whatever.
Neither of us did it very well.
Yeah.
It's the Prince of the Sun, Red Viper.
Exactly. So we had a nice section on why we think it fit the sort of criteria that had been established for the Melee Restricted list.
That it's big power gain.
Oh, huge power gain. It's so difficult to target. You frequently would see it in Melee decks, aside even from Martell. And Martell had huge rush options anyway with some different stuff. It felt like it fit the criteria for the Melee Restricted list. And lo and behold, there it is.
Here it is.
So, you know, I love playing it, but I'm not really going to complain about seeing it.
No, I mean, I am not shocked at all that it is on the Melee Restricted list. I personally didn't feel like it was that huge of an issue, but I'm absolutely not shocked to see it here based on the other things on the Melee Restricted list.
Well, we've done all we can the Melee list, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Well, okay, the Joust list. The Joust list, you know, I didn't count everything up, but give me a moment to... Okay, after that quick counting job here, I discover that the restricted list now has 41 total cards on it, 24 of which are brand new in this update to the Joust restricted list. Yes, you heard that right. The list more than doubled.
Yes, it did.
Wow.
It's a lot of new cards on the restricted list.
I don't remember hearing much about broken combos recently. Have you?
I don't either. No, not really.
Huh.
Let's just go down. We'll read through the individual cards, maybe give a quick second or two to talk about each one, and then we'll talk about the implications after we go through the list. How does that sound?
Or maybe the qualifications.
Or the qualifications.
I don't know. Just how the hell do we interpret this?
We'll talk about whatever we want to after that.
Okay.
Let's go through the list at least.
Okay, fair enough.
Bear Island.
Kings of Summer.
Kings of Winter.
Game of Savas.
I'm going to actually list all these together. Bolton Refugee, Mountain Refugee, High Garden Refugee, Island Refugee, Refugee of the Plains, Refugee of the Citadel, Vale Refugee. So all seven of the refugees are on the restricted list.
Robert Baratheon, the King's Landing Edition.
Aegon's Hill.
Knight of Flowers, again, King's Landing Edition.
Basically the ones that get to do a lot of extra challenges.
Right.
The Hatchling's Feast.
Orphan of the Green Blood.
Retaliation.
The Conclave.
Tenlink.
Mira Reed.
The Scourge.
No Quarter.
Pentoshi Manor.
The Long Lances. You know, I kind of like, you know, I felt like we were reading some list of deceased filmmakers at the Oscars or something. Like, these people passed away over the last year in remembrance. Insert cheesy music here.
I
don't think I'll actually find any to insert, so listeners...
Just imagine.
Yeah. Pretend it's something dramatic.
I don't even know where to start with all this.
I know. It's honestly hard to process.
It is.
There is so much going on here. We're probably going to need to tackle this also next episode.
I can see that. When I first look at this, and this is my interpretation of it, it seems like they're just... restricting good cards.
All the cards.
I mean, not literally all the cards, but all the cards.
Yeah. Well, let's jump back to those and kind of examine what the criteria appear to be on these here. Now, I mean, okay, sorry. Before we do that, I guess we do have our little open letter here, and they do talk a little bit about the restrictions and so on. And something interesting that I find here is that they mention having seen some of the discussion about the size of the card pool and how that impacts the metagame and such, and how they've tried to hit some power cards and crutches and such, you know, to kind of break up the inertia, I guess, of how these dominant deck types are.
I mean, what they specifically mention is that now, I mean, with the card pool at the size that it is, once a deck does become even moderately dominant, new cards introduced to the format are less likely to have an impact of any kind.
Right. So it's interesting here that they acknowledge some of these issues with, you know, power, having to buy power cards and the size of the pool and stuff. They mentioned that they're continuing to explore long-term solutions to these issues, but they've decided for the immediate health of the metagame to introduce a more liberal usage of the game's restricted list. So it makes me wonder if they find some better ideas for a more long-term solution, if we'll see this use pulled.
I mean, it does sound like that is what will happen.
I hope so, because there are cards on this list that I feel were a little excessive. Yes. But now I think we have some ground rules to get into discussing the individual cards. So we've got Bear Island here.
You know, I don't want to toot my own horn, but I do feel kind of personally responsible for this.
I think there's a good chance of that. I mean, I'd seen other people playing Stark decks. I'd certainly seen other Stark decks use Bear Island. You know, I know Fox used to do it freaking all the time, and such. But it never really got the profile in the competitive kind of, I don't know, shared consciousness, mm-hmm. I think, until your Moon Boy deck. Now, part of that, I think, is we haven't had the coverage of events and things.
That's also fair. I mean, there could have been Bear Island decks rocking all over the place, but I sure as hell never saw them.
Yeah, but we didn't have, for years, we didn't have podcasts like this one spreading that news. We didn't have sites like CardGameDB, you know, posting deck lists mm-hmm. and analyzing card choices and whatnot. So a little bit, I wonder if Bear Island is a victim of fame.
I mean, it definitely could be.
You know, a victim of the social networking era.
Yes. Because, I mean, I don't feel like Bear Islands are strict worthy personally. I mean, as far as built-in drawbacks, it has about the strongest you can get in the game.
It does. And I mean, that's totally true. You can't even use...
You cannot control any non-house Stark cards.
Yeah, nothing. It really cuts
which
out...
Which doesn't sound like a big deal until you're building your deck and realizing that you have, like, three or four streets in there and carrion birds and...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough, you know? And this sort of Stark deck now is going to have some trouble deciding between Bear Island or something like No Quarter and Narrow Escape. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want to use Bear Island, very possibly, of course, with the House of Dreams agenda...
Yes.
You're definitely going to be passing up some event options.
You absolutely are.
Most certainly.
Go
ahead.
I was going to say, moving on down, we get to, I mean, again, cards that I do want to kind of talk about together, the Kings of Summer and Kings of Winter agendas.
Now, these two I'm actually totally okay with. I expected these two, I think this is probably a good move.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
I still think even years later, they've been a little too, you know... As we examine kind of turning results and stuff, they haven't been as prevalent maybe as they were before, but they are still just such a huge
factor. You still see them all over the place.
Oh, yeah. You know, Stark Winter came back, of course, in
2012.
Sorry, Gen Con. I keep wanting to say Worlds, but it wasn't Worlds anymore.
I mean, 2012 was...
Yeah.
And then in 2011, Martell Summer was the big deck.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even then, years after they had originally been printed, they are still very popular choices.
Right. And you still had to plan
for
to
them.
Tech
yes.
against them fairly specifically with the Carrion Birds, mm-hmm. which I think is the bigger knock. You know, if it was just a strong deck type that kind of cycled in and out of popularity, that's not as big a deal to me as requiring Carrion Birds or Ill Tidings mm-hmm. to deal with. So it was kind of... forcing deck slots pretty commonly in a lot of other decks just to keep on top of that. Will this make them see less play? Well, now that the list is this size, yeah, almost certainly.
Almost definitely.
Then we've got another one. This one doesn't surprise me too much, or at least it wouldn't have a year or two ago.
Yes.
At this point, it feels like it's a little late to the party. but we also have Game of Savas.
Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, I will never argue that Game of Savas isn't a powerful card. It absolutely is.
Right.
But Martell isn't the powerful, isn't as powerful as it was even a year ago. And definitely not as powerful as it was 2 years ago. Just that other houses get tools to use to go against them.
Yeah. And I don't know. You know, I haven't been using Game of Savas a whole lot myself lately. Because I have been experimenting with some different events and things.
Mm-hmm.
But I can at least see Martell has so many, you know, decent to good events.
It's hard. You can't find room for all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, Game of Savas is one that if I ever built a Martell deck, which was admittedly not particularly often, I mean, Game of Savas was always in my Martell decks.
So, you know, that's one that I'm reasonably okay with.
Yeah.
Then we've got that big chunk.
The big list. 7 of the new cards on the restricted list. The Refugees. I mean, the Refugees are all very efficient cards. 0 cost for 2 strength and 2 icons, except for the Veil Refugee, who's 1 strength with 3 icons. But
I mean, we won't see any more of those deck lists that just throw in one random Veil Refugee out of nowhere. So that'll make me happy because
that always baffled me.
Yeah, that drove me insane just a little bit. Jeez, I mean, this is almost certainly a more than soft ban.
I mean, they're more banned than the Furies probably are.
Yes, I think you are correct.
I mean, you might see a Fury in 1 of every 10 opponents you play in tournament games. I don't think you'll ever see a Refugee, especially when taking into account everything else that's on the restricted list.
Exactly. That's the big thing. With everything else that's on the restricted list, those Refugees are at the bottom of most,
mm-hmm.
most people's piles right now. And that feels a little weird to me because I've barely used Refugees for a couple years now. Yeah.
I mean, I probably use them more than you do, but I still don't... I often build decks that don't necessarily have Refugees in them.
Yeah. I mean, I had Island Refugees in the Greyjoy deck at the Moon
Boy. You
did. And that was specifically for the trait,
yes.
for Ironborn. And I think that was the first time I had thrown Refugees in a deck since the last time I tried a Clansman deck. So that was probably, like, spring after mm-hmm. the Lanny Box came out?
No, I don't remember.
I don't know. Something like that.
The last time I played Refugees in a serious deck that I actually took to a tournament of some kind, I believe it was actually Moon Boy 2012, because I played Bolton Refugees in that, and for that, it was more for the intrigue icon than anything else.
Right. I don't know. I mean, the main reason I ever considered them lately was just for the traits, if I was building a theme deck, mm-hmm. you know? Clansmen, like I said. Or I guess, really... It was sort of a lightly Ironborn-themed Greyjoy deck.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, similarly, Refugee of the Citadel with Maester
yeah.
and all. So, you know, there are definitely theme decks that took a pretty hard hit because several of those featured prominent theme,
mm-hmm.
trait themes for
yes.
those houses.
Also on this list was Robert, the King's Landing Robert Baratheon, the No Shadows Robert that's can stay in any phase.
Again, feels a little late to the party.
Yes,
you know?
Absolutely. I mean, aside from the summer of 2011 when I won Gen Con with him, I've never really seen him in any good, I don't want to say good decks, but contender decks, I think is a better way to say it.
That's fairly reasonable. I don't think he was really causing a stir anymore now that Errata had brought his ability
down
in the line.
Yeah, three per phase.
And that, of course, Errata had changed up the Maester's Path
oh, yeah.
agenda as well. You know, I just don't think he was really on anybody's radar as a problem card. Baratheon's, I think everyone agrees, is at the
bottom of the
barrel
where they usually are.
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like it was just dominating in every competitive deck list mm-hmm. or anything like that. That one feels like
yeah.
a weird call.
I mean, he's just a good card.
Yeah, and I personally don't really feel that that's a great reason, especially if you're trying to shake up. I mean, okay, sorry. I don't feel it's a great reason for the restricted list in general because I think it should be used like the melee list appears to have been used in this update. But if we're going with some of the stuff stated in their open letter there that went up with these updates, I don't feel that Robert Baratheon really fits that criteria mm-hmm. either, because I don't know. It just feels like that's keeping Baratheon on the bottom instead of shaking up the meta more. If you had left him off, say maybe Baratheon hadn't gotten a single restricted card on here, then maybe that
might help them a little bit.
Yeah, maybe that would have still probably shaken things up. Probably not. But adding him to the list is a far cry from helping.
Yes.
Aegon's Hill after that.
I mean, they did specify that they were putting a lot of staple cards on the list. And Aegon's Hill is, it's kind of a Targaryen staple. It's a very powerful card out of Targaryen. I wouldn't say I see it in every Targ deck, but I probably see it in most Targ decks.
Right. It's a crazy good card. And maybe this is a mark aimed at helping kind of bring the House of Pain style decks in some, now that they have several restricted options. I don't know. It's interesting to me that two so far of the options are locations that are most likely to be played with
House of Dreams.
So it's,
I mean, I also don't want to toot my own horn, but three of them so far are actually power cards that I played in some of my biggest tournament winning decks.
Yeah, exactly. Very interesting.
I determine the restricted list. Nate and Damon just look at what decks I'm playing or have been playing over the past year, and they just take off the power cards.
Yep. You know, and actually the next card on this list is another one that I feel somewhat responsible for a similar reason, because this is the Non-Kneeling Knight of Flowers, which I think is in almost exactly the same boat as Robert Baratheon, only the Knight of Flowers has never been in a problem deck or combo like that Robert has been. But you know what he has been in?
What has he been in?
My Army/Knight recursion deck, which every damn time there's update the restricted list, they add another card from that deck to it.
I mean, that probably is just a kick against you.
Yeah, I think that's it. They just know about that list and are going out of their way to screw with
me. You probably posted it online at some point, and Nate just has it in his office. Like, he has, like,
He's just working his way down the list. He's going to get to where he restricts every card in it. I bet so. Oh, no. I played it the first major tournament.
Days of Ice and Fire,
was the first Days of Ice and Fire. I bet he kept that deck list.
He probably did.
And that's why, ever since then, there keeps being cards from it added. Son of a bitch.
Way to go, Will. Next up is the Hatchling's Feast. Again, another card that is, at least in my opinion, just a really good card.
Yeah. You know, I'm not a big Targ player, so this one doesn't feel like it affects me as much. But I think I can see something going on here with now the House of Pain deck, from what I can see, has three cards from it on the restricted list. You got Search and Detain that was already there, Aegon's Hill, and Hatchling's Feast.
I don't want to get into too many spoilers, but three cards so far on the restricted list.
See, that's why I said. Okay. That's why I said it that way.
Okay.
This part of it feels like it's closer to what I feel the use of the restricted list should be. Reining in the power of a dominant deck type.
That is a good point, Will. I agree. I mean, you can still play a House of Pain deck and just pick one of these cards, you know, whether you want to be more burn focused or hand control focused or board control focused. So, I mean, I guess that is a good way to look at it, as opposed to just me kind of seeing just a powerful card getting restricted.
Yeah. Well, the next one then is Orphan of the Greenblood.
Yes.
And this one baffles me. Just straight up baffles me. Sure, it was in essentially every Martell deck.
It's a Martell staple.
But, you know, then again, so is, like, I don't know, Shadow Black Lane or something, right? Or the Water Gardens or whatever.
I mean, that is a little, I don't want to say absurd, but that's comparing apples and oranges.
Hey, both of those are zero cost. It's more like Golden Delicious to Fuji.
Orphan of the Greenblood is a Targ staple, is a Martell staple, like Flame Kiss is a Targ staple.
Yes, and those are actually probably in a closer category because Orphan of the Greenblood functions very much like an event. I mean, he's a zero-cost character, which is probably why he has seen so much play in the past. And he's a strong event here in quotes. But he's a single use. that is by himself card disadvantage. Mm-hmm. At least something like Hatchling's Feast is usually comboed with, you know, Threat from the North or something.
You're wiping out three characters for one card.
Right, right. You're getting solid card advantage out of that. Even, you know, Aegon's Hill and Bear Island, mm-hmm. even at least those are very strong cards
yeah.
that give consistent, long-term, repeatable card
yeah.
advantage.
The first time you use them, you break even, and after that, it's all money.
Yeah. Orphan of the Green Blood does not. Again, he's still a good card.
Yes.
But I don't feel he's anywhere in the league of cards that ought to be on the restricted list.
I mean, I don't disagree. Again, it's a really good card that is now on the restricted list.
Yeah. So, not a fan of that one.
Next up is a plot that actually, for me, through, I don't know, something, it's kind of fallen out of vogue for me. I'm not using it near as often as I used to, which is shocking because it's very powerful. Retaliation.
This one doesn't surprise me. No. I mean, it's a bummer because I love the plot, love using
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
But it fits exactly, I think, in the same realm as Search and Detain and Fear of Winter before mm-hmm. it. These extremely efficient plots that
extremely
are used
efficient,
just everywhere.
Neutral plots.
Right, right. That's the thing. They can be used by any house, which I think puts them over something like, say, the Furies,
mm-hmm.
because they're literally seen in every house. So, yeah. That one doesn't surprise me. That's probably more of a soft ban on retaliation than some of these others, though.
Yes.
And Orphan of the Green Blood, that's probably a pretty hefty soft ban on it, too, with things like Gamus of Oz competing.
Mm-hmm. I guess you're next, Will.
Okay. Next up, The Conclave. I don't know. I guess, you know, it's probably worth mentioning the next one in concert with
yeah.
it, because the next item is The Tin Link. And I guess they just still felt like Maesters had not taken a big
powerful.
Enough hit, which is tough to me. I don't think the Conclave was the issue. I'd been pushing for the Tin Link. I like that we'd been kind of taking a granular approach, and I think maybe just adding the Tin Link to the list would have been
helped.
Enough
yeah.
to get it there, because the Tin Link, I think, was the one that was restricting the rest of the metagame, because it was making non-chain attachments just
mm-hmm.
pretty much unplayable.
I mean, non-chain or attachments that don't have an immediate effect that does something for you.
Right, right. Yeah, you could still manage, you know, convince yourself to play
Flamekissed.
Flamekissed.
Yeah.
Enslaved, probably,
yeah.
still. You know, Pyromancer's Cash, if you're pretty sure you can use your next action to draw.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. But it still, I think, was a bit of a blight on the attachment card
yes.
type. So it feels a little weird to have the Conclave as well on the list. You're going to have some serious choices to make if you're
wanting to play
Maesters,
whether you're
now.
Playing the Agenda, the Conclave, or the Tin Link.
Right. And, you know, the Conclave plus the Refugee on that
is
list.
Is a huge hit to Martell Maesters.
Now you can't even just forgo, like, the Agenda and the Tin Link and play, like a strong...
Like,
in-house kind of, or
mm-hmm.
in-draw deck,
yeah.
rather, Maester, like, theme deck, because they force you to break that stuff
yeah,
up.
Yeah, pick one or the other.
So, yeah, I'm not in favor of the Conclave being on that list,
mm-hmm.
despite it being a strong card. Plus, man, I don't know, Game of Savas is on that list as well. Now, you know, Conclave did get used with Game of Savas
oh, yeah.
in those Maester decks a lot. So, you know, maybe... Maybe, again, this was several of these were targeting that particular deck type, but I don't know. That list hadn't been as popular
and
for
not, I mean, not
quite
since
a
last
while.
Summer.
Yeah.
Next up, Mirror Reed. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to be particularly shocked about this one. I mean, she is, as I've said many times in the past, arguably the strongest card in the game.
Yes. I think a lot of people would agree with us on that one. And, you know, restricting her maybe necessitated an extra knock against Maesters. I don't know, because she has been a huge anti-Maester
mm-hmm.
card, blinking traits and so on. But I'm honestly not surprised to see Mira added to the list.
Oh, no.
I do find it interesting. I wasn't sure after they pulled the Laughing Storm off of the restricted
that they
list
would, yeah.
whether they would be willing to put any champ cards on. Because I still stand by, if you have to errata multiple other card interactions, because of a single card, that card is the problem, mm-hmm. not the other ones. And in this case, I feel that was the Laughing Storm, not Threat from the East and mm-hmm. such. So I really think it should have stayed on the list. So anyway, I don't know. That just makes me much more surprised to see Mira added to the list.
Also on the list is The Scourge. Yet another card that is fairly popular with House of Dreams.
Fairly popular. And a, you know, fairly strong control card. Yeah. But I don't feel that it's any stronger than, you know, Alanisport Brothel.
Oh, it is absolutely not.
Or, hell, even potentially Scouting Vessel.
Mm-hmm.
Though, you know, Scouting Vessel is a further stretch in comparison.
Yeah. I mean, it's a decent comparison to Alanisport Brothel.
Yeah, yeah, that's the closest comparison. Even something like the Pentoshi, not Manor, what's the Volantis Ant?
Volantis Ant, yeah.
And that sort of thing. It just feels weird to me. It doesn't feel like it's mm-hmm. been absolutely everywhere. It's a pretty new card.
Yeah.
In Joust, no one can pull the shenanigans with it that they could in Melee with the Engineer. The Scourge just feels bizarre mm-hmm. to me. Much like the Orphans, it's a good control card, but it's not obscene or degenerate in any way, mm-hmm. and not overly popular.
Yep. Speaking of good control cards that aren't much more than that, No Quarter is also on this list.
Mm-hmm. And again, maybe that's just trying to knock your kind of Knights build and just Stark Murder in general, because there's, what, three new cards from that list?
Yeah.
Here so far?
So far.
Oof. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, No Quarter is, I mean, it's a good card, but I mean, I'm not even sure if I'd go as far as to say it's a Stark staple. I mean, there were two Stark decks in the top 8 at Moon Boy, and neither of them were playing, no, Brett Vaughn was playing 1X No Quarter, Luke Reed was playing 0.
Jeez. I don't know. It's a good card.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely good.
But I guess I'm just kind of, over the years, I'm used to expecting death from military mm-hmm. challenges.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite feel to me like we'd gotten to a spot where there was too much savable kill.
Yeah.
Like No Quarter. Burn may be a different issue since saves don't work on so much of it, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah. That's last week.
Yeah, exactly. Then we've got Pentoshi Manor.
Now, this is another one that I think is kind of baffling.
This one's surprising. I feel it's, again, in a pretty similar category to, like, the Scourge. It's a strong-ish control mm-hmm. location, but part of what surprised me is that it's still pretty new.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that was part of why the Laughing Storm did come off of the restricted list, is that it seemed there was some regret to having put him on so quickly.
I mean, now clearly, the Pentoshi Manor has seen more play time before getting restricted than the Laughing Storm did, since he was restricted before a lot of people had him in their hands.
Right, right. I'm just saying it still feels like Pentoshi Manor and the Scourge haven't been out for mm-hmm. very long. And, you know, I'll admit, if I'm playing against an opponent like I was against you a couple months ago, when you get all three of them out, it becomes pretty hard to win challenges. And it does feel pretty discouraging. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if it's restricted list level.
I do not. This is probably one of my Pentoshi Manor is probably one of the cards that I'm the most shocked to see on the restricted list. Out of all the ones we talked about, whether we agree or disagree, Pentoshi Manor is the least. I mean, aside from maybe, I mean, the refugees, they aren't. I mean, they're impactful on deck building, but not necessarily game impactful. I think Pentoshi Manor is the least game impactful card on the list.
Yeah. Interesting thing, though, this is the first Lanny card we've seen on the list aside from the Refugee, which means, or new card.
New cards, yes.
Which means there's probably a good number of decks that may give it a shot mm-hmm. as the restricted card.
I mean, really, it's that or Castellan.
Yeah, with Castellan still on the list, that makes that choice pretty tough. And of course, the cash is still on the list, but
I mean that's a distant third.
Yeah, I generally do not choose it and get my draw elsewhere.
Yeah. The last card on the list is the Long Lances.
Again, another card in that House of Pain deck that's on the list. Now this one, I understand. Again, this is part of the missing episode we talked about.
Yes.
two cards we wanted to see added to the restricted list.
Well, one, two cards you and Daryl want to see added to the restricted list.
Yeah. Well, actually, it was a Bannerrata restrictor, leave the hell alone. And my opinion was actually to errata the long lances into a limited response. And unfortunately, that did not happen. So, you know, sure, the long lances isn't going to be able to be played along with Aegon's Hill and Hatchling's Feast and whatnot all in that same Targ deck. But you can still build Targ decks to abuse it, for sure. You're still going to have the ability to use it with recruitment and get it back into play. You're still going to be using it along with the Street Wave and whatnot for Uber Recursion. Yeah. I don't think it slows that one particular deck down, the House of Pain, but it doesn't curb Long Lance's power.
No, it does not.
Which I'm not a fan of. I don't think it was quite the right move on the Long Lances.
Eh, I mean, as we mentioned earlier when we were talking about Thatchling's Feast, I mean, it really does make it to where, I mean, you can still play House of Pain decks. You just get to pick which flavor of House of Pain you're playing. Whether it's, I mean, like with Long Lances, the more, you know, combo-y, you know, standing Street Waves to get back extra stuff, or the Big Burn, or Hand Control, or Board Control with Search and Attain. There's now really four distinct flavors of House of Pain. You get to pick which one you like best.
Right. But I still think that leaves a lot of room for more degenerate things to be done in those decks that are abusing Long Lances than in the ones that pick, say, Aegon's Hill for their card or what have you. I don't know. And
so
there you have it.
Yeah, that's the new restricted list.
Whee.
More than doubled. Gained 24 new cards.
Pretty crazy.
So, Will, overall, what are your opinions on the new on the restricted list? Not just sort of the new restricted list, but the restricted list.
I'm not as big a fan with the change in its use, but I will admit, for folks that said the meta felt stale, this is going to force a lot of people to shake up and change their deck lists. I mean, those that, I don't know, I can see people reacting one of two ways, being excited because now they have to build something new because odds are good your deck got hit.
Yeah. I think it was when we were prepping for the episode, where, like you were saying, one of the Team Covenant guys said that his Stark Winter deck went from having zero restricted cards to four restricted cards.
Yeah, yeah. A guy, Alex, posting over on Team Covenant. I missed his last name, but he definitely mentioned that. So that was interesting. You know, and our friend here, John Lee, posted over on the status of the podcast status update where we posted link.
John Lee, I think, should be friend of the show because he has been on the show many times.
Oh, yeah. Friend of the show, sometimes co-host, erstwhile co-host, one might say, posted that he doesn't think it really reads as a list of overpowered cards or those, you know, or a list designed to curtail these broken mechanics, but just as a mechanism to arbitrarily force deck reconstruction, and I think that's really what it is.
I absolutely agree with that, and he actually mentions in his post something that I was thinking of as I was reading his post, that in this era, I mean, he specifically mentions the era of WoW players, but it goes for really any MMO in general, to where enormous changes like this that, you know, drastically change the way you play the game happens every year or 6 months. I think that, I mean, people are a lot more used to things because of things like WoW, to where, I mean, you could log into WoW one day and have your entire class be different.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it happened with Star Wars Star Wars Old Republic. Gotcha. I played Sith Sorcerer and absolutely loved it, and then I logged in one day, and my entire class was 100% different.
That's huge. I mean, and, you know, you mentioned WoW and stuff. I think it's a fairly Blizzard thing, but I think, you know, likening these to these video games is pretty reasonable. Sticking with the Blizzard family of stuff, I played a boatload of Diablo 2 back in the day. And I'll admit, I played Pallies when they were abusive because of Zeal.
Yep.
And I log in for one patch, I don't know, the 1.05 or something like that.
Whatever it was.
And suddenly pallies work very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And that's happened in other games. I played City of Heroes forever, and you know, they'd go through and rebalance stuff. It's just
it's a pretty common thing. Any online game.
Yeah. And I guess that, I mean, it can be really annoying. I know a lot of people that got super frustrated. You know, like one of the times that, say, paladins were nerfed in WoW, or let me say one of the times they were changed. I'm sure this kind of happens in cycles, but they've been nerfed and then rebuffed and things back and forth. But like, it's still really frustrating. But at least you don't have to do the maintenance the same way when you're playing one of these games. That's
absolutely true.
Like in City of Heroes, when they would do a major rebalancing like this, you got a free respec to go with it, right? Yeah. So that you could go, after they made the changes, you could read through the changes and stuff and kind of retailer where your points and skills and things had gone to account for that and play a more balanced build in the way that they want. In Thrones, though, like, you have to do all of that kind of micromanaging. Mm-hmm. Not only are you having to do the new, you know, a quick rebuild, well, it's debatable whether that's actually quick if you want to min-max in a MMO, but, like, you have to keep track of this list yourself now and find everything, and, like, you just have to do all the bookkeeping on the changes that you don't have to do in an MMO.
Yeah, that's fair. But no, I mean, in general, I mean, it really does feel like, I mean, a bunch of cards were restricted just for being powerful.
Yep.
I mean, there are staples because they are powerful, and they are crutch cards because they are powerful, but I don't think that's enough of a reason to, I mean, effectively ban several cards. You can play with them, but you probably should pick one of the better options on the list.
You can play with it, you just probably shouldn't.
Yeah. So, I mean, who knows? I mean, in 3 months, I may change my mind. It's been, the restricted list may be the best thing that I think ever happened. But right now, I am not particularly liking it.
Ah, and just a quick little addition here. A listener, Warren Snyder, has posted explaining angle shooting. It does appear to be a poker term.
So it's probably from Nate.
Yeah, he says angle shooting is a poker term for doing something technically legal but scummy. The classic CCG cases involve selectively announcing passive triggers and effects. So there you go. There's some info for you since they accidentally missed. Explaining that further in the document.
Somebody didn't get copied and pasted.
Something along those lines. I wouldn't be surprised actually to see that caught and updated. They generally, when similar errors have occurred in a doc that's a pretty small fix like that, they've gone back and done it quickly. So there you have it.
Yeah.
Listen back next week as we try to examine the fallout from these changes.
Yeah.
Props and slops! I love how we could.
Yeah, for our listeners, that was complete. Like, we didn't even pre-plan that.
We've done that twice this episode without pre-planning.
We both just kind of looked up and started talking. And I was even sending a text.
Yeah, he really was. So I've got a prop.
Okay.
Those of you that follow us on Facebook have already seen me post about this a couple times, but I don't want to blow up everybody with updates from the podcast about it. But Game of Thrones Ascent. Really fun Facebook game. If you haven't checked it out yet, you definitely should. You get to make your character. It's very much more RPG feel than a lot of the Facebook games that I've played. It doesn't feel as cheap, like it's just kind of scamming you to get money and do this stuff. You know, it's got a fairly interesting kind of character builder with some, you know, different choices, and you choose an origin for your character and pick out a house that you're going to be sworn to as you work your way through the prologue kind of intro thing. And it's pretty cool. If you've played any of the BioWare RPGs, particularly, say, now I'm about to have trouble remembering. The Mass Effect games were BioWare, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I was about to say. You know, you've got kind of the reputation system there. And even something like Fallout with different reputations with several different groups, you get to do some of that same stuff and balance how you work your way through the story in regards to favoring the old or new ways or the realm or family or truthfulness or cunning, you know, and kind of play through these branching dialogue options and whatnot. And I really dig it, you know. It's also got some of the city building sort of thing and working on researching tech. Mm-hmm. And you get some Sworn Swords you can send out on missions and quests and things. And there's a lot to manage. We've got a two champs, one chump alliance, which right now doesn't do a whole lot because the game's in open beta. But it does give us kind of a group message board to post on. It gives you a quick and easy way to contact some folks and be able to send out, you know, gifts and prizes to each other and whatnot. And from what I was reading, kind of skimming the forums for the game itself, there's some plans later on as the game advances to do more with the alliances. I'm assuming some inter-alliance battles and whatnot. Yeah. So,
I mean, it sounds cool. I can't play it through my phone, so I haven't jumped on it yet because, I mean, 99 times out of 100, I'm checking Facebook. It's from my phone. I just don't happen to be on my desktop and checking Facebook. If anything, I'm probably on my desktop doing something else and then on my phone checking Facebook at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I do intend to give it a look at.
Sure.
I have a prop. I know last week I'd slapped Nintendo for making Fire Emblem Awakening impossible to find, but I did finally get a copy today. And Will, I have to honestly tell you, I, for a brief time, was really hoping they're just going to start like pouring and storming so I could stay home and play more Fire Emblem.
Wow. That good of a JRPG?
It's an SRPG, so.
Oh.
But yes, I am. I mean, I played it for 2 or 3 hours this afternoon, so I'm not particularly far into the game. But for anyone that is considering playing it or has played it, you will eventually meet a character named Frederick. And Frederick is an enormous badass. And, I mean, this is the first Fire Emblem game I've ever played. I've heard a lot of good reviews about it and thought it sounded really cool, so I checked it out. So it took me a while to realize if everyone else was just horribly weak and Frederick was the standard go-to power, or if Frederick was just incredibly overpowered.
Because have you decided he's overpowered?
He is just incredibly overpowered. It is the only excuse. Because at this point, I have 9 or 10 people that I can bring into my parties, and all but him are about on the same power level. I mean, when they're fighting, it generally takes 2 or 3 hits to kill something else. Frederick has so far not killed something in one hit and has not taken damage, whether from dodging or just having enough armor to just ignore it.
Jeez.
So, I mean, I'll have my party, and there'll be 30 guys out there. I'll send Frederick after half of them and the rest of my party after the other half. And Frederick will come out unscathed. He's an unstoppable killing machine.
And yet this game is amazing?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, okay, interesting. Yeah.
It also allows for permadeath, which I love in games. So if someone in my party dies, they are dead.
Oh, snap. Someone should be careful. Then, huh?
Nah, I mean, if I see that Frederick is starting to take damage, I'll probably pull him back and give him some backup. But
oh, okay.
Until he actually takes damage, I don't think it's necessary.
Okay, fair enough.
I highly doubt I'll jump in enemy difficulty from unable to hurt him to able to kill him in one hit.
Jeez.
Because he's also cavalry, so he moves faster than everything else.
Balance issues. Oh man. Oh well.
Yeah.
Cool.
I if you own a 3DS, I highly recommend it. It is the first 3DS game, and really the first DS game I've played in general since I got my 3DS, that I have played for more than an hour or two.
Do you play with the 3D screen on?
I don't usually. It actually is really cool. Like, I don't want to say really cool, but it is very pretty playing with the 3D on this one.
I had a friend show me theirs, and trying to look at the 3D made my eyes hurt.
It does that to some people. After a long time, it hurts my eyes too, but I can play it just fine. For a standard gaming session that I tend to get.
Gotcha. Cool. Speaking of games, I'm going to throw in. I'm continuing through the Walking Dead downloadable episodic game. Finished up episode 2 over the weekend, and it was real good. So I'll keep you guys updated as I move through
awesome.
episode 3.
So you did finish episode 2?
Yeah.
Okay. What'd you think?
It was good. You know, it's brutal. Things are definitely continuing to get darker.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the intro to episode 2 made me feel squeamish.
Yeah.
I've never felt quite so nasty having hit the A button, you know, half a dozen times and nothing else. Just hitting the A button.
Yep.
And I felt horrible. But I mean, they're doing a really good job of kind of pushing the weight of your decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you can't please everybody.
No, you absolutely cannot.
It's absolutely impossible. And it's tough. I mean, especially, I think this is not going to spoil anything for people because I'm not going to use any names. But there's a character who, in episode 1 and very much at the beginning of episode 2, is talking about everything they're doing, the hard decisions they're making is for the good of the group. And at one point in episode 2, they basically say, you know what, you think it's so easy? You try, mm-hmm. right? And then a little bit later on, okay, quite a bit later on,
yeah.
in episode 2, you have to make a choice. It's a black or white A or B choice. And for the good of the group, you have to do something really terrible to that person, basically.
So that
affects, yeah. that
so
person.
So I assume you did it?
Yes.
Right here. Without hesitation.
I hesitated.
Not a second.
I thought about it. But I thought to myself, I have to. Like, it's either that or we probably all die. And that character was pissed.
Yeah.
Probably still is when I start episode 3.
They won't get over it.
I didn't think so.
It's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. So
not something you just kind of forgive.
So there's that. It's a very immersive game.
We'll say. Yes, it is. I loved it.
Yep.
I have another slop. Another prop. Not a slop at all. It's to Batman Arkham City. Or not Arkham City, Arkham Asylum. Man, I just don't know how to talk today. Just really in the last couple seconds. Alicia started playing it. We were at GameStop over the weekend on one of the fateful days that I was trying to track down a copy of Fire Emblem. We picked up a couple games for Kylie, and Alicia was looking for something to play, and she didn't want to spend the $40 on the Mario 3DS second game. So we're looking for something a little cheaper, and we came across Batman Arkham Asylum, and she's like, "Oh, you were talking about this? Should I get it?" And I was like, "Oh yeah, it's awesome." So she started playing it, and she is really liking it.
Awesome.
Yeah, she is. She's not terribly far through. I think the last time I saw her percentage tracker, she was like 11 or 12%. So she is still fairly close to the beginning of the game. She just on Monday, when I got home from work, she had just put it down after the Bane fight, which is fairly early in the game. But she had fought him once and lost, and then Kylie wanted to play one of her games with Felicia, so they started doing that. But up until this, like, I was watching her play for pretty much all of Sunday when she was playing. I was doing other things, but also sitting there while she was playing, and I realized that, although this is also a slop, I'm going to tie into it, to me, I'm an awful backseat gamer.
Oh, man.
Like, awful about it.
It is tough. When Kristen was over here trying to play Arkham Asylum, I did something mm-hmm. else so that I wouldn't want to just take the controller away.
Yeah, I mean, I never want to take the controller away. I never have that issue, but like, I'll be watching her play, and I mean, I've beaten the game. I played it all. I know what all I'm supposed to do. Eventually I had to just stop talking unless she asked me a question, and I would answer that question and say nothing else.
Gotcha.
Because otherwise, I may not have a fiance.
That has to have been bad when she was playing through Mass Effect.
Yes, in Mass Effect, we eventually got, because she sat down and played through Mass Effects 2 and 3 over the course of, like, a month and a half. So, I mean, that was enough, like, that eventually I figured that I just need to answer a question she asks and leave it at that. But that was 7 months ago, so I'm out of practice at not backseat gaming. So hopefully now with Fire Emblem, I can play that while she's playing Batman, and I'll be distracted enough that I won't just want to tell her exactly what to do, and I'll let her figure it out.
There you go.
Because I've yet to see her fail at something twice.
Nice.
She'll mess something up one time or make a mistake, and then, I mean, outside of just, like, doing something stupid that's just walking past a window rather than going over something, walking past a window and getting a hostage shot.
Gotcha.
So a little thing like that on her second playthrough on a hostage situation, she, rather than going over the building, just walked past, She failed that one twice before she beat it, but just for doing something stupid that I didn't even realize what happened.
Cool. So, yeah, I mean, that's all I've got this week. Mine's pretty positive.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like I had a slop, but I cannot for life of me remember it. So I'm gonna stick with my two props.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Well, this has been another thrilling episode of Two Champs and a Chump. Join us next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
I figured you said what I said in the episode, so I figured you were going to say Danger Zone.
Danger Zone!
Thought so, bitch.